You are listening to Radio Free Signs of the Times, broadcasting into the heart of an occupied America.
Welcome back to the Signs of the Times podcast. We're continuing our conversation with French astrophysicist Jean-Pierre Petit. We're discussing his experiences with the Oumites, and we pick up where we left off last time.
I have written a book in which I tried to speak about that as a fiction. There are special kind of monkeys on the earth called bonobo. Bonobo are chimpanzee and small chimpanzee, but they are very intelligent. And in the University of Florida in Yerkes, they have developed experiments to exchange information with bonobos. And bonobos have not vocal cords. They cannot speak. And something interesting, they tried to imitate men. If you say, for example, a cup, the bonobo will say, and if you make an analysis of the sounds, you will find he tries to do that, but he has not...
He doesn't have the vocal cords to be able to say
it. If he had vocal cord, probably would do that, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I were a researcher in Yerkes, I would put artificial cords to chimpanzees that he could act with muscles when he's very young to see. Perhaps he would talk. Perhaps he would be obliged to admit them at the United States. Organization. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so to exchange with bonobo, the researchers use a screen, a sensitive screen. Bonobo can put his finger, and the image which are on the screen has nothing to see to do with real image. If some word means banana, it's not a banana, it's something else. So then they can manage that. Well, you have just read what was done about all that, but we discovered that this monkey have memory. A researcher can say, I will visit you tomorrow. I will bring a gift. What do you want? You want a candy or you want a banana? And the bonobo shows the sign with candy. The day after, the girls come back and the bonobo moves in his cage. Whoa, 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 whoa. He shows the sign gift. And then the girls pull banana. And he shows no, and he shows candy, and so on, you know. So they are intelligent. Mm-hmm. But what can you do with monkeys? You can't just manipulate them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's limited. You are not going to explain quantum mechanics to them, you know, okay? So we are different, and between bonobo and us, we have many millions of years different. We can understand that. We can understand that we have animals that are, we consider they are more primitive than when we are. For bonobos, they can recognize 2,000 words by voice when we talk to them. But we could talk to the whales. We could talk to insects. But something is very difficult to imagine for us is that we could be visited by people who would be different from us from million years, because we would be the bonobos. Uh-huh. And they would be in situations they cannot communicate easily with us except manipulating us. And that's what it took years before thinking about that, you know. And I am an astrophysicist, and I can tell you something. A million years is very few, a very short time for the evolution of a planet and stars. If you could take two planets on which the life developed at 10, 20, 100 years light distance or more, the chance that these two planets will be synchronic, evolution would be very comparable, very weak. Either you go on this planet and you find snakes as you find animal, and you are the snake. Mm-hmm. You are the primitive. But to be similar, it's very improbable. So, as a human, and when you read the human letter, they have built a schema which is believable and that we can understand. You know, when we talk to bonobo, we use concepts that they can understand. We show things that they can grasp on, you know. Mm-hmm. So is the UMO document an experience? Possibly. So, and if it's an experience, who runs the experiments, you know? Mm-hmm. That's fantastic, because this idea is that we could be visited by people very advanced with respect to us. And we had a contact by email with a strange correspondent who pretended to come from another planet. Well, it may look like strange to you, but, you know, why not? So what I can say is that the scientific level was quite high. He was talking about artificial intelligence, about logic, about things like that. So it was interesting. And we were two or three friends, and it was during several months. And after a while, my friend Jeanette said, "It looks like a machine, you know. There are no feeling. The way it talks, it's strange." And then we started to attack this correspondent. And then the answer was, "I am the creature made with flesh and blood, which corresponds with you through this machine. I can die. I have to eat for my life. I have what we call feelings, but I use."
But it was an interface to some sort of artificial intelligence that was behind it.
The word was interface protocolaire informatisée. I don't know how you can translate that.
A computerized
interface for relationship?
Yeah, for communication protocols.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we discovered that.
And was this connected with the Umites?
No. But who knows? Was it true? The idea that...
Or was it some AI machine in the basement in Washington that was...
No, it was just warning us. Mm-hmm. Then the research about AI, artificial intelligence, were very strong and developed in military fields. Mm-hmm. And that it's a weapon worse than everyone, all others.
Mm-hmm. It just seems to me, just on the point that that you make, that that there may be other civilizations who are much more advanced than us, but who don't have the ability to communicate with us effectively in the same way the bonobo, we can't communicate effectively with the bonobo monkeys. It seems to me that inability that we have to communicate with monkeys is our problem. It's that we're not developed enough. At some point in the future, we may be able to. So a civilization much more advanced than us, possibly you could say that they should be able to communicate with us effectively, and the bonobo monkeys. You know what I mean?
Yes, but I don't think you realize what is really a very large difference. You know, take your example, us with respect to the bonobos. Mm-hmm. What can we do? There is a barrier. We mm-hmm. can do nothing else than manipulate. What can we do? Mm-hmm. We cannot feel that what they feel, mm-hmm. and they cannot feel that we feel. Mm-hmm. You understand? There is a qualitative difference. And we're completely different in our mind. And if some people would be different as like in this case, we cannot imagine that, you know. Mm-hmm. We can't even imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But my point is that they should be able to understand us.
But we can understand the bonobos too. But what for? You know, we make very interesting experiments with bonobos. For example, it takes many years to teach a bonobo how to use a screen, how to understand the world, and so on. So a researcher made an experiment in the same room. There was a bonobo who was able to understand the words and to answer with a screen, and another bonobo, a young one. And then this young one made a mistake, and the girl said, "You're naughty, you're naughty, you should not do that." And you know what did the other interface between the two? Just like he said, don't be angry about him, he cannot understand. And so on. And if we, you know what we could do would be to put chords on bonobos and see what happens. We could be surprised. But the extraterrestrials, they don't put chords. They give sounds.
They put implants and...
Oh, yeah, implants.
New examinations, yeah.
When you've discussed the Umites, you've said that they don't have any poetry, they don't have any music, they seem not to have the same emotions or no sense of humor. And at one point you mentioned to me something about it was like a colony of ants.
Yes, but you know, what I pick from this experience of 30 years is a glimpse on the humanity. At the beginning, President Week, I was evoking a visit to Sandia Laboratory and Livermore Laboratory. It was a consequence to a letter indicating what was going there. And I can, you know, I seem very aware about military purpose. I know a lot of things about many fields. We find that in these letters. In these letters, we discover how ugly we are. You know? I was talking about Max Brosser. This is funny. But when we look back to our humanity, we are scared, deadly scared. You know? When you are just projecting in our future with crowd control machine, we discovered, you know, they told us about things that were done by the American in South America and by the Russian in Afghanistan. It was horrible, you know.
And the training of torturers to go down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And all the time. And each letter, we learn more about our monstrosity. And the question now is not to know if it's so, it's not true. See, what could we do for us? And I have a friend who has written a book recently published. I think it's very interesting because it's not a new idea, but he enhanced it very clearly. It's a question of ethnocide. It means that if extraterrestrial people would land on the Earth, would show like a mass attack, well, our civilization would collapse completely. Our social system, our scientific system, our religious system would collapse, you know. We could not stand the truth. There are a billion people that would be completely destroyed mentally by this, just this knowledge. And this
that's what we were speaking about earlier, about the idea of that from our point of view, looking at the news and the way these things are being dealt with, that there's there seems to be a progressive disclosure in terms of official sources in the news about, for example, Mars and life on Mars and life on other planets. And it seems to us that this is possibly a very
slow
it seems to be a logical way that they, the controllers or the people in control, would go about this process if they're going to deal with the subject of extraterrestrial life. Then they'll begin with the little tiny microorganisms, because people can deal with that. like you're saying, that our society would collapse. They probably don't want our society to collapse, so they do it tiny piece at a time. And the first tiny piece, because most ordinary people think that we are alone. They have been told that we are alone in the universe.
Absolutely.
So the first thing they hear is we're not alone, but it's not scary. It's tiny, tiny microorganisms.
You know,
they can't attack us.
I can tell you something. In the early letters sent by the Inuits, they said there is a primitive life on Mars, and you will soon discover it. Uh-huh. Soon means 30 years for them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it corresponds that what you say. Perhaps someday the NASA and the space organization will say there is a discovery. We have discovered a very primitive bacteria on Mars. Mm-hmm.
They could do this tomorrow. Tomorrow, literally tomorrow, it could be in the news that there is life on Mars.
Yeah.
And it would be because there's been 4, 5, 6 years of slow build-up to that. And it wouldn't be a problem tomorrow to say it.
Yes. You know, imagine the shock. Just that. It would be a shock for all the Earth while not alone in the universe. Mm-hmm.
But don't worry, it's only little microbes.
That's right,
they are very little.
They can't attack us, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Well, maybe
but
they
we
can.
Should launch preventative war so that they never will.
Yes.
We should attack
but
them.
But, you know, we had another contact by emails during the president year. That was signed by humans because now some messages are sent by emails. And what is a true letter? What is a false letter? Mm-hmm. It has no meaning. There is something with a content. Is this content brilliant? Is this content low? That's the only thing you can say.
Mm-hmm.
And in this letter, in this message, something was completely fantastic. It's about the Shoemaker-Levy comet.
Mm-hmm.
You remember in 1982, I think, two astronomers, Shoemaker and Karen Levy, they discovered blocks that was assimilated to the debris of a comet passing close to Jupiter. And these debris were going to the perihelion or aphelion and coming back to Jupiter. And people computed the trajectory. And as I said, this debris was dragged Jupiter. Unfortunately, we are not located at a good place. But Galileo, our satellite, is very well placed, and we will have information about that. All thousands of astronomers and researchers say that's fantastic. We are going to observe that for the first time. But when the object went into Jupiter, Jupiter rotates quite fast. So we saw spots, probably we remember the spots, they were as large as Europe. So how such tiny object, like 20 kilometers large object, could make a spot like Europe? But just because Jupiter is made of layer of material and some dark layer, is underground. Not underground, in the lower layers. And when this tiny object enters Jupiter, it comes at 100 kilometers per second with an angle of 45 degrees, and it enters something like 100 kilometers deep. And this object is vaporized. And in place, you have a pit with very hot gas, like 10,000 degrees. So it works like a geyser. You know what is a geyser?
Yeah,
a geyser. This geyser eject gas, and this gas is spread on a big surface. So as an astronomer and scientist, people could explain why you had such big spots. And then the letter said there are no they are not debris of comets, they are bombs. And these bombs were built by Americans and brought to Jupiter for testing antimatter bombs. very powerful, something like 10,000 megatons bombs each one. And Galileo was designed to observe this impact. And when we had the measurement from Galileo, they were very low with respect than the value recorded on the Earth. And it was not planned that somebody could measure values from the Earth. So there is a great suspicion that the value given by Galileo were recorded before and they are completely false. Because if there were bombs, you should have gamma rays, you know. That's for the impact should be on the other side. Well, and then the letter said Galileo passed close to Io. Io is a satellite. Mm-hmm. And perhaps if you know this story, the satellite was out of function when going over Io and then recovered its possibility after. And the letter said, how could you bring back a close picture of a planet you intend to modify? And then you had pictures, you had movies like Deep Impact. You had a lot of movies like that. Mm-hmm. You had a movie in which you remember the guy who is pouring a hole in
a comet.
In a comet.
Yeah, Bruce Willis.
Pulling a hole and so on. So
he was an American hero. He was saving the planet.
Exactly. Well. So you say, suppose we are not a comet, but a family of comets falling on the Earth. What should we do to save the planet?
Hide.
Hijacking, you know.
Hijack them, yes.
No, take the Earth into the twin universe for a moment.
Yes, go into the twin universe for a moment. Yeah, for an example. But, you know, this object will arrive at 40 kilometers per second. So remember in the movies of Bruce Willis, the Russians are supposed to have a special vehicle, very fast. You need a very fast vehicle to go to the comet and to make an half turn. No rocket can achieve that. It's impossible. You are absolutely unable with conventional system to go and to meet a comet. And then you have to turn, to make an half turn, and then to make a hole in the comet. How do you make a hole in a comet? You have Bruce Willis with his fancy hammer. Yeah, well, and then you put a bomb, H bomb. No kidding. That's crackers. You know. No, you need antimatter bomb. You need antimatter system to dig in, and you need imagery propulsion with very high specific impulsion. All was described in this letter. Well, you could say this is brilliant. This is, Mr. Steven Spielberg, if you're listening, this is a new film, you know. We have a dozen films for you.
Yeah.
This whole series.
A series.
And it's got the science is more realistic than Bruce Willis.
Much more realistic than Bruce
Willis. You need a secret American aircraft.
Yes.
And you need an antimatter bomb.
Yes. Waiting, Spielberg will call us to continue.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Well, so after reading this letter, you can say, well, this guy has a lot of imagination. He knows a lot about the parameters of the mission, and he used that to make this report fascinating, of course. But we started to study the problem of Shoemaker-Levy objects. There are many strange problems. First, when this was detected by Shoemaker and Levy, it was very easy to show that with a very small telescope. you did not use Palomar to see this object, you know. So the question was, there are 1,000 people who observe nearby Jupiter. Why didn't see the object before? Because they emit light. Then they emitted light, but sometimes they stopped. Sometimes you have a dozen of objects, sometimes you have only seven, and so on. The explanation was given in the letter, you know. It was that the bomb were carried by craft, and this craft were producing plasma all around, and sometimes plasma doesn't work so well, so the object doesn't give the light. And then when we analyze the impacts of the different elements, we cannot find two similar. Some emit magnesium ion, some don't. So the conclusion, scientific conclusion, is that it's a non-unconventional comet. Now, it's funny, you know, that so, as a conclusion, it's a typical unconventional comet.
Typical unconventional
exactly.
comet.
Exactly. And then, well, we looked at this story, and then a year after receiving this letter, Galileo passed by Europa, See, and the instruments were stopped again, you know.
Coincidentally.
Again, yeah. And, well, and you know, it was last year, the end of Galileo. NASA decided that the mission of Galileo ended. So they decided to destroy Galileo, and they pushed Galileo in the atmosphere of Jupiter. Look at the file, look at the web. When Galileo was projected, you had big spots. Why? As large as Europe again. And there was even a text to justify this Galileo as a plutonium generator. 1 meter long, you know. You have just pill of plutonium, and it works like a small nuclear generator to produce electricity. So the guy who wrote the text said, when Galileo dive in the atmosphere, the pressure grows, and then the pressure will compress the plutonium pills.
And you have a nuclear fusion.
Yeah. Fission. Because if you compress. But, you know, imagine this device is projected in the atmosphere. It will be spread. The altitude will not be the same. The chance that all the pills will act at the same time is zero, you know. So he canceled this text because, you know, I put an answer in my website and say, you know, we are not fools. You can't believe that. So this is a strange story of Galileo. And it goes with movies, with Bruce Willis. So, suppose these are really bombs. You cannot use it on the Earth. It's impossible. One bomb will destroy the life on the Earth. Then why do you want to shoot you? Why do you want to shoot Europe? Could it be bombs against comets, against asteroids? So, do Armageddon? Do we have something like Armageddon? And then astronomer will answer, well, you know, sometimes people talk about an unknown planet that would strike us, but we would observe it. No, not. It's not evident. When the solar system get formed, you have the sun, you have the planets turning around the sun, and they exchange energy, and their trajectory are quickly modified. And the plan of ecliptic forms, quite rapidly, you understand what I mean, the plan of ecliptic. And would decide who is the planet of the ecliptic? The answer is Jupiter, because Jupiter has the strongest momentum. So he's the biggest planet, and he obliged the other planet to go in his planet trajectory. And then the action of energy makes the trajectory to become quite circular. It reduces eccentricity of the trajectory. Well, but it can happen that a planet 2, 3, 4 times larger than the Earth would be accelerated by a big planet like Jupiter or Saturn and sent away on a very eccentric trajectory, 2,000 and a half years period, with an angle. So this planet doesn't play the general game, doesn't exchange energy. So it conserves its trajectory very elliptic, while the other become very circular. And if by chance this trajectory cuts the trajectory of the Earth from time to when this planet is accelerated by a big planet, if this planet enters what we call Roche sphere is almost 2 times the radius of the planet, 2.5 times, and if this planet goes close to Jupiter and is as close as that, then it's break in million pieces, and this is not a planet. This is a poignée de cailloux. It's a thousand comets and asteroids, you know. And this cannot be detected by a telescope. And then when it crosses the trajectory of the Earth, you have two solutions. Either it passes very far, either we get one. If we get one, I would just ask, what happens if it falls in the ocean? Answer.
It'll vaporize the oceans.
Yes, and then?
And
cloud cover.
Cloud cover.
Yeah, kind of like a nuclear winter effect.
No, nuclear winter, because, you know, when you have a cloud, this cloud interrupts the light. So it gets cold. And it rains. During 40 days and 40 nights.
Biblical.
Exactly.
But in the work that Laura's done, and in our work, we found evidence that this kind of thing is going on, but the explanation's a bit different. It's that the sun has a companion star that's a dark star with an orbit of about 27 million years, and that when it's coming closest to the solar system, it goes through the Oort cloud, and it's like a bowling ball taking the pins and hitting them, and it sends out a lot of debris, the rocks, from the Oort cloud that then come and get on a circuit.
Interpretation, of course.
And what it amounts to, your explanation, the one that we're working towards, is that there are cyclic catastrophes that hit the globe that involved asteroids and comets. And these come back regularly.
And the last one was very recent, about 500 AD, when there is, ice core, from the ice, archaeological and dendrochronology, they analyze the tree rings that in Eastern Europe, and in Europe you have the Dark Ages, what they call the Dark Ages, when civilization seemed to just disappear. Well, there's certain people, there's a guy, Mike Bailey, who has looked into this, and he's
a dendrochronologist.
Yeah, he proposes the theory that that this is what happened in about 540, I think, AD, that Europe, a large part of Europe, was essentially,
destroyed,
set on fire by cometary impacts,
Suppose we have this kind of menace, of threatening all around. Suppose extraterrestrial people know that. Suppose they know the date. Suppose it could be 2 or 12 or any kind of date. They will cross the cloud. And then, if you want to see what happens, read the Bible. It's described
exactly,
completely. You know, the sky becomes dark, stars are falling, and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's the catastrophic scenario. Nothing happens, and the man will have the sky falling on the head. Well, so we are good extraterrestrials, and we said, what do we do? Could you do something? Well, you know, you have this tribe in the United States. They have an atomic bomb. Ah, they have the atomic bomb? So they are very close to do something. Yet we could accelerate the evolution. Let's build a craft and put bodies in and put on... You know, it's strange. In Roswell, you have people who traveled over such large distance, and then they arrive and said,
and they crash. Oh, no. We took all this time to travel here.
They hit a bit of bad weather in the macrocosmic system.
Personally, I think that if, getting back to the idea of, extraterrestrials being more evolved than us,
mm-hmm.
that this could have been, if Roswell happened, then I would suggest that it was deliberate.
Yes,
manipulation. A deliberate crash.
Manipulation.
Yes.
You know, I have a humoristic interpretation that was given by a woman many years ago. Perhaps I will tell it in French and you will translate,
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when you have a car, quand on a deux voitures et on est en train de guider quelqu'un. Et on lui dit, je lui avais dit de le suivre, je n'avais pas dit de me serrer trop près.
The other story is you've got two cars and one of them is guiding the other one. And there's an accident, and the person in the first car said, I told you to follow me, not to hit me.
Well, but perhaps it's a manipulation just to accelerate the process, and Shoemaker-Levy could correspond to this kind of project to make people in condition to destroy this comet. But as the United States have advanced weapons, they are tempted to become the master of the world and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so extraterrestrial people say, oh gosh, they are going to...
the other explanation is that the extraterrestrials knew, mm-hmm. given the nature of certain humans, that given this power, it would end up directly there. And so the manipulation wasn't a good manipulation,
yes.
but it was a negative manipulation.
That's where we are.
And why would extraterrestrials think, if we think that, there's this cometary, the cyclical cometary impacts that have happened throughout the course of many, many years, why would any extraterrestrials think that they should save this group of civilization, us, not the last one? Why do they want to save us at all? Why do they care?
Because we're, if we...
I think we're very stupid. I think they should be, they should want to wipe us out.
Let them burn. No.
Send more comets to get those people.
Because we are good wines.
We are good wines?
I try to find an explanation, but if we go back to human text, we could think that even if the planet doesn't exist, there are some parts that correspond to the truth. And we are a peculiar planet even in the solar system because we have a core, hard core. And the story about the birth of the moon corresponding to a collision becomes more and more admitted. Astronomers began to think that there was a primitive Earth and an object as large as Mars stroke the Earth went on the center, and the ejecta gave the Moon. Mm-hmm. So life was destroyed on the Earth. Life was destroyed on the incoming planet. perhaps we return back to the bacteria, but bacteria is a very advanced level for life, you know. Mm-hmm. It just takes some 100 million years to rebuild all the things, you know. And it's not a problem.
Cosmic time, that's not very long.
No, it's not very long. So it arises a question, what happened to the souls of the incoming inhabitants? Are they underground, you know? Are they all devils? Well, this is another subject.
Well, maybe we can get into that in our next podcast and look more at the metaphysical issues.
Why not? Why would they act? Why was the Earth so peculiar? So if the moon is created by a collision, this collision brings a lot of kinetic energy. This energy is dissipated in thermal energy, so our magma becomes active again. And this activity is anomalous with respect to another planet. We have made maps of all the planets of the solar system, like Mars and like Venus, with a radar examination. And there is no movement of the continent, you know. They have not mountains, but they have volcanoes, and these volcanoes are still there because there is no weather, there is no rain. You know, if it would rain, this huge volcano that you have on Mars would disappear within 2,000 years. Mars would be completely flat, you know. So the Earth is not flat because our continents are moving, and when they collide, you obtain the Alps, you obtain the Himalaya. And suppose you stop the movement of the continent, in 100,000 years, the Earth would be flat. And what the humid texts say is that our planet is very peculiar. The others are not like that. Their own planet, if it exists, is flat as Ireland. They are not deft. You know, the altitude maximum is 200 meters, and depth in the ocean is weak too. And there are no natural barrier, no mountains. So the number of species is 500 less than on our planet. In any kind of animal, birds, snakes.
500 times less.
500 less. And we have races when they arrived in 1949, and they had the first image of the human being, the surface of the Earth. They thought that we were painting our face in yellow and black because they were men with several colors, you know. So we have thousand languages. We have incredible
variety.
This is the same thing for our genetic. We are a tank for genetic data. So perhaps this is the interest we show for others.
And on that, I think we need to end it for this podcast. We'd like to thank Jean-Pierre Petit again for being with us.
And as always, you can visit our website at www.signs-of-the-times.org. And you can visit Jean-Pierre's site at www.jp-peet.com. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.